Our scripture reading for this morning is a couple of selections from the 12th chapter of the Gospel according to Mark. We'll be reading verses 13 through 17 and then 38 through 44, and you will see why. And then they sent to Jesus some Pharisees and some Herodians to trap him in what he said. And they came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with truth. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" But knowing their hypocrisy, he said to them, "Why are you putting me to the test? Bring me a denarius and let me see it." And they brought one. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Jesus said to them, "Give to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were utterly amazed at him. And as he taught, he said, "Beware the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces, and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more in than all those who are contributing to the treasury. For all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put everything she had, all that she had to live on." In April 1992, there was a bomb blast in Sarajevo. If you think back 25, 26 years now, you know that the civil war in Bosnia was in full swing. Sarajevo was under siege for something like 3 years. And people risked their lives simply to go out and buy food, if they could find it, or even try, perhaps, to go to work. Well, on this particular day in April of 1992, a bomb blast killed 22 people who were waiting in line for food. A few days later, in the middle of one of the many bombed-out marketplaces in Sarajevo, a man came out into the middle of this bombed-out marketplace, set his chair down, and took his cello and played a wonderfully profound piece. It's known as Albinoni's Adagio in G minor for cello. His name was Vedran Smolovic, and he was the principal cellist for the Sarajevo Symphony Orchestra, which I assume wasn't doing very much at that time. And he went out to the same place at the same time every day for 22 days as a memorial to those 22 people who were in line that particular day to get food. The place that he picked to go to was one of the most dangerous in Sarajevo. There were snipers that were routinely shooting people from the tops of buildings, and miraculously, he was not wounded at all. And this is something that caught people's attention. You know, there's sometimes things that happen that individuals decide to do something, and the profound meaning of what they do is just incredible. Like the man in front of the tank in Beijing and the Tiananmen Square demonstration, that sort of thing. And this has always stuck with me, partly because I play the cello, although certainly not as well as he did. And I certainly would not want to tackle Albinoni's Adagio in G minor. I don't know if Dave would want to. Have you ever tackled that, Dave?
Probably.
It's not an easy piece. It's very difficult, but it's profoundly beautiful. I think this guy, he understood the nature of the cello. The cello is in the same range as the whole range of the human voice, which is why it's so evocative and so rich. So he knew exactly what he was doing. Now, if you look at the enormity of what was going on, where people were being killed simply because they were Muslim or they were Orthodox or they were Roman Catholic or whatever they were, or Jewish, and there was violence everywhere, and neighbors turned on neighbors, and it was an incredibly painful time for the people that lived there. So it may seem that what he did was absolutely useless. What good would that be? It didn't help anybody. It didn't feed anybody. It didn't provide anybody with shelter. But regardless, it was a gift. It was a gift given to the whole world to remind us that death and destruction do not have the final word. He brought what he had. He brought simply what he had. Now we have a couple of texts to look at. Sort of a tag team. I don't often do this, but it seemed as though these two texts would go together well. The first one is one that's very familiar, and it's one that I actually have heard people use to justify that God doesn't want us to pay taxes. Well, good luck with that. Where the Pharisees, and this takes place in the temple, confront Jesus, and after buttering him up just a little bit and laying it on thick, then they ask him the trick question. Does God want us to pay taxes to Caesar? Now, the question is not, and the point of it is not whether or not we should pay taxes. Jesus asks for for a coin, and he asks for one of these. I have several props today, as you will see. This is a denarius of the Emperor Tiberius. I like to fantasize sometimes that this is the actual coin that the Pharisees pulled out and showed to Jesus. And of course, you know how the story goes. He says, well, whose picture's on the coin? Oh, that's the emperor. And no, whose title and inscription? Well, that's the emperor's. And I can just imagine Jesus barely being able to contain his laughter as he says, well, and give to Caesar what Caesar's and give to God what is God's. And of course, in Jewish thought, everything belonged to God. So the only thing that belonged to Caesar was that measly coin. So this takes place in the temple. And by the way, as a bonus, since they were in the temple, they weren't supposed to have pagan money in the temple. So here's the Pharisees, some of the people who are running the temple, and they have pagan money in the temple with a graven image. Not good. Busted. Then in the temple, we find Jesus sitting with his disciples, and I like to think that Jesus was the consummate people watcher. It's clear that he loved to just sit and watch people, watch what they do. And so I can imagine him and the disciples sitting and just watching people and watching the wealthy people come in wearing fancy clothing and dropping their big contributions into the temple treasury. And watch out for them, because their condemnation is much greater. And then a widow comes in, and she has two tiny coins, two of these. Oops, upside down, there we go. These coins are called lepta, the lepton. They're little tiny copper coins. They're smaller than a dime. They're very tiny. And they're pretty commonly available today. You can get them on eBay for anywhere from $10 to about $30 or $40 a piece. They turn up in hordes in the Holy Land in huge numbers. So I thought I had to have a couple because of the biblical connection. But these coins were the least valuable in circulation. To give you an idea, I did a little bit of calculation and figured out that at $8 an hour, just a hair over minimum wage, gave everybody a raise for the day, that the denarius was worth $64 a day. If you figure eight hours a day at $8 a day. So this is a lot of money. You know, this would be more than, say, carrying around a $50 bill in your wallet. The lepta, on the other hand, would be equivalent to just a few minutes' labor. It would be equivalent to about a dollar for the two of them, okay? So there it is. So in contrast, if we wanted to look volume-wise at the difference between the lepta and the denarius, imagine that these two pennies are lepta. And here's 128 leptas equal to a denarius. It's a big difference. I think one of the things Jesus may have in mind with these two encounters about money is the disparity between that denarius and those lepta. The people that gave money out of their abundance would have a whole bag full of their denariuses, denarii. But the woman only had her coins. And we don't know how often she gave. It may have only been once a year. We don't know. It's not surprising, though, that the Pharisees would have a coin worth that much, just laying around in their pocket, burning a hole in their pocket. And this woman would have what to us would be just almost throwaway money, a dollar. And that's what she chose to give. This encounter that Jesus has with the Pharisees is a part of a whole section in Mark that takes place in the temple. The passage that we looked at last week, chapter 13, actually came after. I switched them around because of the themes for each day, in which Jesus talks about the end of the temple. And this was why. This was why these encounters with the wealthy and with the poor, because this mattered much more to the leadership than the humanity of the people that they claimed to serve. There are a couple of ways that we could look at the story of the widow. One would be to emphasize the injustice of people being expected to give money to support the temple, which was basically a money pit. That treasurer, the treasury as it is described, was actually a whole set of rooms in the temple. And it was absolutely filled with money and golden vessels and fancy liturgical clothing. And you could imagine the wealth that was there, in contrast to the poor people who came and dropped their little offering in because they wanted to give to God. So that's the other perspective. We can look at it from the widow's perspective. She's probably not thinking about the injustice of how the temple was run, and all the fancy clothing and the money that the clergy had. All she's thinking about is making her offering. She wants to give something to God. to be thankful for what she has. So we're going to focus on that. This is one of the classic texts in the New Testament about money. And there are a number of texts in the New Testament, in the Gospels especially, about money. And money, of course, is not just the physical coins or paper money or the electronic transactions that govern our lives so completely now. It's what you can do with it. And we all know all too well in our political system the phrase, money talks. It sure does, doesn't it? Ask any politician. Money talks? Mm-hmm. Money is power. Money is distilled power. Doesn't make it evil. Not at all. Money's neutral. Paul didn't say that money is the root of all evil. He said the love of money is the root of all evil. There's a big difference. What you do with it is what makes it neutral, evil, or good. So think of the contrast between these two coins. The denarius, the money of the wealthy people who collaborated with the Romans, or the little lepta. Modest, cheap, poorly made, but representing all that somebody had. When we look at the story of the widow in particular, a question that might come to mind is something along this line. Do I have enough to give? Do I have enough to give? Is what I have to give good enough for God? Well, think about this. If we're looking at just the resources that we have as though they come from ourselves completely and not from God at all, then no, it really isn't adequate because it's limited. That's how the people dropping all the wealthy people dropping those coins and making a show of it might have looked at it. Because they weren't just doing charitable giving, writing out a check quietly and sending it off to wherever. They made a show of it. Look at me. But if we think of everything that we have to give as coming from God, the lesson that Jesus taught the Pharisees that same day, everything is God's. Give to Caesar what's his. Make him happy. But give to God everything that belongs to God, which is everything. The widow clearly understood that. If we think of everything that we have to give as coming from God, and we know that everything is God's, then yes, we have enough to give. But don't think of it narrowly in terms of money. The giving of money absolutely is good in today's world. That is what can make the difference between people starving and feeding their children, or rebuilding their homes after a natural disaster, or getting medical care, or whatever it is, or advocating for the poor. When we give money, it helps other people. But you know, we live in a society that is in which we're always competing. We're competing even when we don't know that we're competing. Probably every one of us, to one extent or another, compares what we have with what somebody else has. Now, you may not act on it, and you may not really care, but you do notice who has the fancier cars, who lives in the bigger house, and so forth. We're always comparing ourselves to other people. We all do it. But what we don't do sometimes is compare ourselves to God. Because when we do that, then we realize the richness of what God has given us. Not God in terms of the magnitude of what God is, but what God has and what God has given us. And there are lots of voices. There are lots of voices that we hear that tell us that we're not good enough. How many times have you heard people say to a child, "Oh, you'll never amount to anything. Don't even try." There are too many voices in our society that tell us we're not good enough to meet somebody else's very high standards. And unfortunately, often it is the Christian church in all its different varieties that is first in line to tell people that they're not good enough for whatever. They're not good enough. Friends, that's not what the church is about. What the church is about is building people up and helping them use the gifts that they have to build each other up. Don't listen to the negative voices, whether it's the negative voices that you hear outside or whether it is the negative voices you hear in your head telling you that you're not good enough. Don't listen to that because it's not true. So as we're here thinking about gifts and giving and what we have to give, think about what you do give. Again, not just of money, but what do you give of yourself? That's really the only way we could give everything. I mean, obviously, nobody expects that you're going to give everything you have because you have to live. Well, we know that. But if we think of all that God has given us, which is infinite, then there is lots to give. And to do so with thanks. With thanks, with appreciation. That's what we celebrate this week. The gifts that we have been given. The gifts that others have given us. And the gifts that we can give in thanksgiving to God. Amen.